Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading articles dated July 2nd through July 8th. We'll start with this article headlined Illinois Regional Economies Shrink in First Quarter by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, July 7th. Economic slowdown might have begun before pandemic. Springfield. The Illinois economy shrank at an annual rate of 5.4% during the first quarter of 2020 compared to the previous quarter, according to federal data released Tuesday, an indicator of just how severely the COVID-19 pandemic affected commercial activity. The gross domestic product figures for the January through March period represent the total value of goods produced and services provided during the quarter. University of Illinois economist Fred Geertz said in an interview that virtually all of the decline occurred in the final weeks of March after Governor J.B. Pritzker issued a statewide stay-at-home order that forced many businesses, schools, and other employers to shut down or scale back operations. All evidence suggests that the first 2 months of January and February were not impacted very much by the virus issue, but then they have a huge impact, and in March, even though the formal shutdown didn't begin until the last week or so of March, he said. Nearly all sectors of the economy took significant hits during the quarter, led by arts, entertainment, and recreation, which took the biggest hit with a 36% rate of decline. Accommodations and food service fell at a rate of more than 27%. Other sectors taking big hits included finance and insurance, down 10.6%, and transportation and warehousing, which includes airline and rail transportation, which fell at a 9.8% rate. The only bright spot in the report was the agricultural sector, one area of the economy that was not affected by the stay-at-home order, which grew quarter to quarter at a rate of 183%. The overall decline in Illinois was greater than the national average of 5%, but smaller than the average for the Great Lakes region, which was 5.7%. Neighboring states Iowa, Missouri, and Wisconsin all fared better than Illinois, while Indiana and Kentucky fared slightly worse. The U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, which produces the GDP numbers, is scheduled to issue its first estimate of second quarter activity, April through June, later this month, but state-level GDP figures won't be available until October. However, some early indicators of what's likely to be in the second quarter report came out recently from the Commission on Government Reform and Accountability, or COGFA, the Illinois General Assembly's fiscal monitoring arm. The agency reported this week that during the fiscal year that ended June 30th, general fund revenues received by the state were $1.1 billion below last year's revenues, and that virtually all of the drop-off occurred during the April through June quarter. Much of that was due to declines in personal income tax collections, which were down by a net $765 million due to a combination of mass layoffs and delaying the tax filing deadline to July 15th. Corporate income taxes and sales taxes were also below last year's levels. There were also big declines in revenue from riverboat casinos and the state lottery, although there was nearly a 3% increase in liquor taxes. The report also said June showed signs of improvement as the state gradually began to reopen its economy. Personal income tax collections during the month were up $173 million, or 9.4%, as many people returned to work and began filing their 2019 tax returns. Corporate income and sales taxes remained below June 2019 levels, but overall state tax collections were off by only 0.1%. Geertz said he sees similar trends in his monthly flash index, a general measure of economic activity that shows whether the state's economy is growing or contracting and by how much. A flash index value greater than 100 indicates a growing economy, while a value less than 100 reflects economic contraction. That index had been over 100 for 96 consecutive months, dating back to March 2012, when Illinois began pulling out of the Great Recession. It fell to 99.8 in March, 94.2 in April, and 92.8 in May, as effects of the economic lockdown began to be felt. But it ticked up slightly in June to 93.1, indicating the economy was still weak but improved from May. Things are clearly turning around now, but that turnaround could be halted almost any time we had another kind of outbreak, he said. I suspect, though, that even if we do have a resurgence of the virus, we're going to be more open about that and not have a complete shutdown the way we did back in March. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Health Administrator provides guidance on in-person public meetings by Steve Hoffman, July 7th. Piatt County's chief health official has told the county board that meeting in person is now a possibility, but recommended that sessions also be open remotely via Zoom or other conferencing software. In response to a request from Piatt County Board Chairman Ray Spencer for guidance after the state moved into Phase 4 of the Recovery Illinois Plan, DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Administrator David Remmert said, I would recommend that you maintain an option of either coming physically to the meeting or allowing participants to Zoom into the meeting at their discretion. This way, all participants are able to continue their civic responsibilities as dictated by their personal comfort level. Phase 4 allows gatherings of 50 people or less. Remmert also had the following advice for in-person public meetings. If there is any potential whatsoever of having a crowd size of over 50, precautions should remain in place to reduce the size of the group. For those who meet physically in person, please remember to wear a mask and maintain a 6-foot distance between others. Ensure that surfaces are cleaned between or after meetings. And, if possible, a best practice would be to have a symptom questionnaire and temperature screening at the door. Anyone with positive symptoms or a fever should not participate in the meeting. Remmert said he shared the same guidelines with the DeWitt County Board. The Monticello City Council is planning to meet in person with safety measures in place on July 13th. Others are expected to follow suit as the summer progresses. Some entities, including the Monticello School Board and Bement Village Board, have kept their meetings open to the public through the COVID-19 crisis, with some board members attending remotely. Zoom only for now. The county board is planning on a Zoom-only meeting Wednesday morning, something state's attorney Dana Rhodes said may not be covered anymore under the governor's emergency orders. A judge in Clay County last week ruled in favor of Representative Darren Bailey, who had alleged that Governor J.B. Pritzker's emergency powers had lapsed on April 8th, and any executive orders after that date relating to COVID-19 are void. Pritzker's office said they will appeal. There's also a question of how wide-ranging the Clay County ruling is. Rhodes said the county should cover itself and amend its bylaws to allow for remote meetings. I sent some information on this in March. I would be happy to prepare the appropriate paperwork. It's very easy to do. Both Douglas and Moultrie counties have already done this, said Rhodes. It is not likely the bylaw change could occur Wednesday, since that issue is not on the published agenda. 5 new cases of COVID in DeWitt County by Steve Hoffman, July 7th. 5 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in DeWitt County between June 30th and July 4th, with health officials linking them to more travel and household contacts of others who have had the illness. The surge of cases is most likely due to travel outside DeWitt and Piatt County, along with an increase of testing within the community. The more tests that are completed, the more likely it is to find the infected individuals, said DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Administrator David Remmert. DeWitt County has seen 12 people test positive for COVID-19, about 1.1% of the 1,050 who have been tested. 7 of those 12 are considered recovered. Piatt County has recorded 20 cases, also about 1.1% of the 1,892 tested. 18 have recovered. Even better news is that local cases have typically been mild, with no hospitalizations or deaths reported, said Remmert. He added that the current trend in cases is in younger populations. Most cases are occurring among younger and healthier age groups. Typically, these individuals recover well with mild signs and symptoms, stated Remmert. We've done a good job of protecting vulnerable populations, which include residents of long-term health centers. Last week's new cases in DeWitt County included a 19-year-old female and a 21-year-old female in the same household, a 44-year-old male and 5-year-old male who were household contacts of another case, and a 27-year-old male. Masks have helped and will continue to help curb the spread of COVID-19, said Remmert. Remember, the mask face covering protects others by preventing the transmission of potentially infectious secretions from your nose or mouth while talking, laughing, sneezing, or coughing, added the health official. He also recommended that those who travel out of their area get tested upon their return. Judge appoints special prosecutor in OMA case by Steve Hoffman, July 7th. The chief judge of the Sixth Circuit has appointed a special prosecutor to review open meetings violations that the Piatt County State's Attorney's Office has alleged against members of the county board she represents. Judge Carl Koritz last week found that State's Attorney Dana Rhodes had a conflict of interest when her office filed misdemeanor criminal charges against 5 county board members, alleging that they had violated the Open Meetings Act on May 13th. When a county board meeting held via Zoom conference was apparently disconnected for a closed session. Some members of the public were not able to reconnect after the board returned to open session. The misdemeanor charges were filed on May 15th, with Rhodes saying they were filed in response to citizen complaints. County board member Shannon Carroll asked the court on May 18th to appoint lawyers for county board members, saying Rhodes refused to tell me if the office would represent the board or go against us. Right now, the board has 0 legal counsel we can freely talk to, he said in a court motion. Rhodes had said she would ask the Illinois Attorney General's office to represent the board members, but Koritz said that decision should be made by a judge, not her. The authority to appoint a special prosecutor lies solely with the court, said Koritz, who chastised Rhodes for not going through that procedure. The court is bewildered as to why a state's attorney's office that recognizes its own conflict would choose to file charges before seeking the appointment of a special prosecutor, he wrote in his July 1st ruling. In response to Carroll's request for an outside attorney, the state's attorney's office conceded that they are witnesses and would not and could not serve as prosecutors. With that admission, Koritz wrote, then it would follow that it should not make a charging decision. The decision whether to charge an individual and what charge to file are the two most fundamental and powerful exercises of prosecutorial discretion. Having recognized that it would not and could not serve as prosecutors, the state's attorney's office has nevertheless filed no petition to recuse itself. Koritz vacated all future court dates until a special prosecutor determines whether to proceed on the current charges, file different or separate charges, or decline prosecution. Koritz appointed the Illinois State's Attorney's appellate prosecutor to look into the allegations. That office exists to handle criminal cases that a state's attorney should not handle due to conflicts. I think that this is a very fair resolution, said Rhodes after the ruling. I was preparing to ask that the Attorney General's office be appointed anyway. So this works out for everybody involved. Obituaries. When Nola Grant of Charleston passed away on Friday, July 3rd, visitation was on Tuesday, July 7th, with a funeral mass at 10 a.m. Wednesday at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church. Memorial gifts can be made to the American Diabetes Association or St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church and may be mailed to Adams Funeral Chapel, 2330 Shawnee Drive, Charleston, Illinois, 61920. Sharon Ray Gale Weddle, 72, of Monticello, passed away Wednesday, July 1st, at her residence. Graveside services were Monday, July 6th, at the Monticello Township Cemetery. James Allen Umfleet, 59, of Bement, passed away July 2nd at his residence. A private service will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to Carl Hospice. Patricia W. Patty Morgan, 96, of Monticello, formerly of Springfield, died on Wednesday, July 1st at Carl Foundation Hospital. Cremation will be provided by Butler Cremation Tribute Center prior to ceremony. Graveside ceremony, 10 a.m. on Tuesday, July 14th at Oak Ridge Cemetery. Those who wish to attend may meet inside the Monument Avenue entrance for procession to the gravesite. Memorial contributions may be made to Piatt County Animal Shelter, 301 South Charter Street, Monticello, 61856. Carolyn S. Vance passed away Wednesday, July 1st, at the Piatt County Nursing Home, Monticello. In keeping with Carolyn's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. A private family service will take place at a later date. Memorials may be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home or the Multiple Sclerosis Society. Ellison earned Scholar Athlete Award by Jason Brown, PCJR correspondent, July 2nd. In April, recent Monticello graduate Andrew Ellison was selected as the Section 4 male recipient of the Scholar Athlete Award in the state of Illinois for the NIAAA Student Athlete Scholarship. The purpose of the scholarship, according to its website, is to promote, facilitate, and increase the knowledge and understanding of the vital role of interscholastic athletics in the educational system. This scholarship program will foster and recognize the partnership between the NIAAA and secondary education. The scholarships will recognize the distinguished scholastic, leadership, and sportsmanship attributes of high school student athletes and the importance of high school athletics in each student's life. Ellison's application went to the section level, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and last week, the Illinois Athletic Directors Association and the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association announced Ellison was named one of 8 male recipients of the Scholar Athlete Award for the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association. "The process started back in January or February," Ellison said. "I was approached by our athletic director, Dan Sheehan, that I was going to be the representative from our school. So I filled out my applications and wrote my essays and whatnot, and I sent it in." Ellison had multiple essay questions from which to choose. He chose to write about the impact athletics has had on his life. Ellison will receive a $1,500 check and a plaque from the Illinois Athletics Director Association and a plaque to recognize his accomplishments. "I found out that I won the state award in April," he said. "I honestly was not expecting to win that at all, so it was a great honor for me." Ellison will present his essay at the annual Athletic Directors State Conference in East Peoria in August. "To win the regional representative position was even crazier to me," Ellison said. "I just found out about that last week. So it's been a pretty long process. From my understanding," he said, "I'll find out about the national award in August. So all in all, it'll be a pretty long process to narrow down." If he wins the $2,500 award, he's scheduled to attend the National Athletic Directors Conference in Tampa in December. Only one other winner from Illinois in 2018 has won the national award. The award has run continuously since 2007. Ellison graduated with a 3.96 GPA and played 4 sports for Monticello: soccer, football, swimming and diving, and baseball. He set Monticello soccer's record for goals in a season as a senior with 38. He received News Gazette All-Area Boys Soccer First Team status last fall. 2 months before winning the Scholar Athlete Award, Ellison received news that he had been accepted to West Point. "I'll be going to the United States Military Academy," he said. "I actually leave town on the 12th of July. I've got basic training for a month, then I'll start the academic year." Andrew is the son of Brad and Angela Ellison. T. Teen Unemployment, A Side Effect of COVID Crisis, by Clara Rudolph, PCJR correspondent, July 1st. Unemployment has soared since the rapid spread of COVID-19 began in March. One demographic hit harshly by the closing of pools, restaurants, and movie theaters is teenagers. Not only are the usual jobs on hold, but a whole new batch of teens arriving at the age to work are out of luck. 16 is the legal age, where a teenager can find work at just about any location. A new wave of teens have just hit this age, but they outnumber the job options. It's hard to try and find a summer job since we're not allowed to have more than a certain number of people in one place, explained Kiara Welter, an incoming junior at Monticello High School. A lot of restaurants and other places aren't hiring as many people now. There aren't a lot of opportunities. While many teens view work as a necessary evil, others look forward to it as a sign of greater independence. A driver's license is often considered one of the first steps in becoming independent. Naturally, holding an occupation stems from the ability to drive. Now that I can drive, I could finally do a lot more jobs, Welter shared. But of course, now I can't. The worst thing about it is just being bored all day, she continued. Summer is the best time to work because you don't have to juggle schoolwork and a job. Also, since I run cross country, I don't have that much time to do a job during the school year. Typically, summer is the prime time for teenagers to earn money, especially athletes. Monticello senior Emma Brown added, I participate in at least 5 major extracurriculars each year, plus many smaller clubs and activities. With keeping my grades up, it's not possible for me to have a job during the year. The same goes for so many other students. Summer is the best opportunity most of us have to earn money. However, teenagers may be missing out on more than just money. Work can also provide a stage for teens to make gains in responsibility and accountability. Having a high school job is great for developing work ethic, dependability, and social skills for the future. It's also a good time to make friends and learn what you might be interested in, said Brown, a would-be lifeguard at the Family Aquatic Center. I miss having the feeling of productivity and satisfaction. It was way more fun to enjoy my free time because I felt like I worked for it. While it's easy to focus on the present, the lack of jobs could also create issues down the road, especially for teenagers faced with mountains of college tuition. My personal plan was to save up this summer and the next before college, but obviously that won't be a possibility, Brown commented. However, I'm lucky to be privileged enough not to depend on my job too heavily, she acknowledged. There are many kids around the nation that depend on their job to get by or to help their parents. Students who are more affected by poverty might struggle with this first year of college. Between the skills, money, and satisfaction that holding a job can bring, it's safe to say that many teenagers are disappointed with the current lack of opportunities. Despite the discouragement, teens are sacrificing their opportunities for the good of their communities. I'm pretty bummed, admitted Brown, but I know that in order for all of us to remain safe, I shouldn't be working. Pre-K screenings August 4th in Bement, July 2nd. Appointments are being taken for pre-kindergarten screenings in Bement, which will be held from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on August 4th. Call 217-678-4200, extension 2. When attending the screenings, come to door 10 at the school, where participants will be greeted and directed to a screening area. Masks are required. Questions can be directed to Amanda Musgrave at amusgrave@bement.k12.il.us. Nursing Home Committee approves $170,000 loan to County General Fund. By Steve Hoffman, July 6th. The Piatt County Nursing Home will loan the county's main operating fund $170,000 to get it through until property tax revenue begins to roll in, probably by the end of the month. The loan, approved Monday, July 6th by the County Board Nursing Home Committee, is to be paid back to the nursing home on or before August 1st, or upon payment of the property tax revenue, according to a promissory note outlining the terms of the loan. Available dollars to pay bills and fund payroll has come close to running dry in the county's main operating fund, the general fund, and the general corporate fund, a line item within the general fund used to pay a good chunk of county bills. A decision was made last week to cash in the final $160,000 in general fund certificates of deposit to meet county payroll. The loan from the nursing home is needed to pay bills until property tax revenues begin to be deposited. County Treasurer Debbie Marshall said that revenue stream should arrive around July 27th, or a week after the July 20th deadline set for property owners to submit their first payment. The second installment is due on September 8th. Property owners were given extra time this year to pay real estate taxes due to the COVID-19 crisis. The motion at the nursing home committee meeting was to send the loan to the county board for its consideration this Wednesday. But County Board Chairman Ray Spencer pointed out the agenda for the monthly meeting had already been posted. Instead, the loan will likely be a part of claims approval at the county board level. Nursing home and Maple Point Supportive Living payroll use that process, with payments being approved by the nursing home committee that are then listed on county board claims. Oil and tire recycling event, July 3rd. The Piatt County Soil and Water Conservation District, in a partnership with Piatt County Service Company, will host its annual oil and tire recycling event from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Friday, July 10th, in the lot behind 427 West Marion Street, Monticello. Direct questions about event details can be found online at www.piattcountieswcd.com or by calling the SWCD office at 217-762-2146, extension 101. SWCD board members, staff, and local volunteers will be on site to assist residents. A small donation per disposed car tire is recommended. Recommendations on donations for larger tires are based on size. Recycling and reusing used motor oil is the preferred disposal method and can provide great environmental benefits. Recycled used motor oil can be refined into new oil, processed into fuel oils, and used as raw material. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories through July 8th. Please stay healthy. I look forward to reading with you again soon.